Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 10th, 2020, from my home studio in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode looks at the trials and tribulations voters faced in Tuesday's primaries, an update on the top races, insight from DHEC on hospitalization rates and skyrocketing cases, the continued push to onshore supply chain jobs, and much more. Additionally, we want to hear from you and your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and a little bit of what's going on in your life. Did you go vote the other day? Have you been going to restaurants? Are you still staying home? Let us know at 803-563-7169.
Snake alert. Snake alert.
Also, it is not too late for you to join us for our Lead Zoom happy hour this Thursday at 6:30 p.m. That's right. If you're listening to this podcast on Thursday, it is tonight at 6:30 p.m. It's going to be lit. I think that's the term the kids use. AT will be there, of course, and the Post and Courier's Kaylin Bird and Jamie Lovegrove, as well as the state's Mayon Schechter and the Associated Press's Meg Kennard will be there as well. We have so much to talk about. They'll be giving us an overview of the races we saw play out on Tuesday evening, the results, some surprises, and much more. Come with your favorite beverage or two and some questions because we'll be listening. We'll have everyone participating. It's going to be a big old good time. We hope to see you there. You can RSVP at bit.ly/sclead happy hour. Again, Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Also, tune into This Week in South Carolina on Friday evening, where my guests will be Meg Kennard and USC economist Joey Von Nessen. It's Friday, 7:30 p.m. or Sunday at 11:30 a.m. on SCETV. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 remains ongoing and is not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 575 deaths, and currently there are 15,759 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of June 10th at 4 p.m. We saw the second highest daily case rate on Wednesday with 528, and state epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell gave one of her starkest warnings of the pandemic on Wednesday.
And I have to say that today I am more concerned about COVID-19 in South Carolina than I have ever been before. For the past 2 weeks, we've seen some of our highest daily numbers since the pandemic began, and there have also been recent increases in our percent positive, which tells us that more people than we would hope for who are being tested are sick. This is why we need everyone's help in re-emphasizing how critical it is for every one of us every day to wear a mask in public and to stay physically distanced from one another. Those two precautions, masks and social distancing, are how we stop this virus. It doesn't take hard data to observe that many people across the state aren't social distancing and aren't avoiding group gatherings and aren't using masks in public. And we really need all South Carolinians to take these precautions every day, not just to protect ourselves, but to protect others who could become severely ill or who could even die if they're exposed.
Greenville County has become a major hotspot in the state, with 2,371 cases being reported and high daily rates. Dr. Bell said a big driver of this is the virus spreading through the upstate Hispanic community, so DHEC is pushing hard to spread its message in the area. Currently, there are 7,600 inpatient beds being used, and of those, 513 are occupied by people with COVID-19. There are some 2,800 beds available statewide. And we saw a peak on Tuesday with 541 beds for COVID-19 patients. Governor Henry McMaster continued to stress that folks use face masks, avoid crowds, and continue to use social distancing because he said it's your individual responsibility and not mandates by the government that will fix the situation. Okay, so I know we're always talking about COVID-19, but here is a little primary election roundup for you, some politics about what happened, what we saw at the polls on Tuesday. And we're going to focus a little bit right now just on the federal delegation. Senator Lindsey Graham won the Republican nomination with 68% of the vote, defeating three challengers, and will face Democrat Jamie Harrison. First Congressional District Republican Nancy Mace handedly defeated three other candidates with 57% support to become the nominee, who will challenge Congressman Joe Cunningham this fall. Second Congressional District Republican Joe Wilson defeated Michael Bishop with 74% of the vote, and he will face Democrat Adair Burrows. Democrat Hosea Cleveland will challenge 3rd Congressional District Republican Jeff Duncan. Democrat Mo Brown will challenge 5th Congressional District Republican Ralph Norman. And Democrat Melissa Watson narrowly avoided a runoff to become the 7th Congressional District nominee, and she will challenge Republican Tom Rice. There are several more races and surprises that we will discuss in our Zoom happy hour at 6:30 p.m. today. That's Thursday, June 11th. Be sure to tune in and get that link at bit.ly/sclead happy hour. But let's take a closer look at State Rep. Nancy Mace's victory and primary day, which in some areas, voters waited in long lines for hours, even after polls closed. I was down in the Charleston area on Tuesday and spoke with voters at West Ashley High School, where, due to COVID-19 concerns, 6 precincts were consolidated into one location with 5 voting machines and 3 poll workers processing hundreds of people. Corliss Mitchell waited for 90 minutes in line after she realized the high school was her new polling location.
I drove to the St. Andrews, the Grace Church, but I was told to come here, so this is not my usual voting spot. Yeah, that was a little bit of an inconvenience.
Gloria Lane expected there to be long lines and regretted not voting absentee, an option that was available to all registered voters for this primary.
I figured there'd be lines like this. I was hoping there wouldn't be, but I wasn't really sure how to do the absentee process. I tried to read about it online. It seemed like not more trouble than it was worth. I decided to just come, bite the bullet. Wish I had it, though. Wish I did it absentee.
Primary turnout was 22.7%. That's the highest in a presidential election year since 2004. Total absentee ballots cast was 171,094, simply unprecedented in a primary election. In the past 2 primaries, absentee ballots ranged from nearly 52,000 to 57,000. Back at West Ashley High, Peter Barnett said he had never been in such a long line, even during presidential elections, but that people seem to keep their distance while waiting.
Yeah, I think it's a big mess. I also heard that some staff didn't show up that they were expecting to have show up, and so I've heard other precincts were, like, essentially no line at all. So it was basically, this is just one that probably needs a little bit of work and a little bit more staff to come next time.
Despite some people leaving the line due to time constraints, many voters who donned masks were appreciative of the contactless protections in place, such as swabs to use on the touchscreens and plastic barriers between poll workers and voters. These and others were aimed at limiting the spread of COVID-19, especially as cases reach new highs. And news reports showed long lines into the evening and past closing time at 7 p.m., something voters in parts of Richland County, which continued its streak of sloppy elections, experienced. Fewer poll workers and inexperienced ones led to confusion in many places. But even while some folks were still waiting in line in parts of the state, State Representative Nancy Mace declared victory over a field of 3 other challengers and avoided a runoff. Mace high-fived and hugged some of the more than 100 supporters gathered on the dockside bar at Saltwater Cowboys in Shem Creek. No one wore masks except for a handful of reporters, and there was no social distancing. I don't even really remember seeing hand sanitizer. Nonetheless, the pandemic was an afterthought as the sweaty crowd erupted in celebration minutes after basking in a golden sunset at the humid outside bar. Mace, who was standing with her 2 children, addressed her supporters.
I've done everything from work at the Waffle House to serving in the State House of Representatives. I'm the daughter of the most highly decorated living graduate of the Citadel, my father, General Emory Mace. I wanted to follow in his footsteps as a kid, but I hit a few road bumps along the way. I dropped out of school and wasn't sure that I would actually get there. But I finally did, because in America we believe in hard work, and that everybody deserves a second chance. Amen. So I know the struggles of every Waffle House worker, every small business owner, and every mom who lives in the district, because I have walked in those shoes my entire life. I know firsthand that public service can help solve problems across party lines because I've done it in the state legislature. Even though I have one of the most fiscally conservative records in the General Assembly, I don't operate that way. I operate in a very nonpartisan and bipartisan way. This district was held by fiscal conservatives like Tim Scott and Mark Sanford for years. And we have lost that independence. And I want to bring back that kind of representation. I'm building my campaign based on those fiscal conservative ideals and those ideals to be an independent thinker across the district.
Mace faces off against Democrat Joe Cunningham this November and launched her opening salvo for the seat Republicans have been gunning for ever since Cunningham flipped it Democrat in 2018, after it was solidly Republican for nearly 40 years.
Joe Cunningham votes with Nancy Pelosi of California and AOC of New York. 85% of the time.
We'll recap that race and others tonight on our Zoom happy hour. Yes, I keep plugging it because we want you to come stop by at 6:30 p.m. Make sure you RSVP and join me and Meg Kinnard on This Week in South Carolina Friday at 7:30 p.m. on SCETV for more about the other races that happened Tuesday evening. One of the most discussed economic issues involving the onset of the pandemic is what will change with our supply chain. Mike Switzer interviews Mark Ferguson, the Dewey H. Johnson Professor of Operations and Supply Chain in the Dartmouth School of Business at USC. Mike led off by asking about what the global supply chain that runs through South Carolina will look like.
We're kind of at a crossroads for the Southeast here. So many distribution centers and trucks going up and down our interstates, and of course the Port of Charleston. Quite frankly, a reason a lot of the manufacturers move here is the easy access to the core customer base, the interstate network, and of course, the port.
That seems to be becoming more and more important. Where is manufacturing located? So much of it is overseas, but so much of it is also now being looked at to repatriate and move back here to the U.S. Are you seeing that that will indeed become a trend?
Well, I think it's already been a trend. We may not have maybe noticed it because it's a slow-moving trend, or has been a slow-moving trend. But certainly as, you know, the actual manufacturing itself becomes more automated, then the advantages of producing faraway places just for the labor cost diminishes. So it makes more sense economically to start bringing some of that production back.
A fairly historically recent innovation in supply chain, I guess, and I think maybe Walmart is credited with this, and that's the just-in-time inventory concept. Is that contributed to many of these shortages that we've seen since this pandemic started, such as toilet paper?
Well, probably true credit for the just-in-time goes to Toyota. Walmart kind of copied those techniques, you know, from a retailer's perspective. But what it does is it just takes a lot of the buffer inventory out of the supply chain network. During normal times, you know, any inventory that's just sitting around that's not being used is a cost. It wasn't necessarily a bad thing to have a lean supply chain. What we have seen, you know, with the recent crisis, though, is when there is very little buffer inventory and there's shocks to the system, especially on the supply side, then you do run into shortages like we have seen with toilet paper.
I know so many people who are so confused as to why we are still out of their favorite brands of toilet paper.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a funny situation. Luckily, it's not maybe as serious as we're running out of food. You know, toilet paper is one of those items. It's actually not disrupted because it was produced overseas. Most of the toilet paper we use in the U.S. is produced right here. But it's a low margin type of commodity, very little variability in the demand. So there's very little extra capacity in that supply chain to begin with. Thus, you know, 2.5 months in, we're kind of still seeing major shortages.
We've always seen hoarding going on when hurricanes are arriving, snowstorms. So now, are we going to see a different management technique going forward for inventories?
there'll always be major events that you kind of didn't see coming. They call those black swan events. So I think one thing we will probably see change out of this is more thought and discussion on the resiliency of a company's supply chains. Will they be playing more what-if analysis?
And you can find that story and other stories from the South Carolina Business Review on southcarolinapublicradio.org. And be sure to tune into This Week in South Carolina, where I'll be speaking with USC economist Joey Von Nessen about the state of the economy, unemployment, and the recession that we find ourselves in. That's Friday at 7:30 p.m. on SCETV channels. COVID-19 cases continue to rise to record levels, and so do hospitalization rates of those who are experiencing the severe effects of the disease. On a recent conference call with DHEC officials, I asked physician Dr. Brandon Traxler about these worrisome numbers and what hospitalization rates mean as these continue to rise in the state.
I think that this correlates with what we're seeing in our percent positives and our case counts, that there is what we're seeing with the number of COVID patients hospitalized, which is that there is disease continuing to be spread and increasing in its spread, especially compared to several weeks ago. However, I don't think we're at a point where we need to be panicking about surge or looking to implement any of those actions towards it. I know that plans have always been in place, and so we're prepared if it ever would get to that, but I think we're still quite a ways from it.
Dr. Nick Davidson, who's DHEC's COVID-19 incident commander, gave us additional insight on these hospitalization rates.
The occupancy rates are still actually somewhat below that which we would expect during a non-pandemic time. So we have to understand that the hospitals and the hospital association has worked with us very closely to do a great job at reducing non-essential surgeries and whatnot. So the bed capacities we're seeing that are in the 60 to 70% range, even though that's a bit higher than it was, say, a month ago in the 50s to 60s, typical bed occupancy rates around the state are in the 80 to 85 percentile range. So we're still actually, we have quite a bit of capacity, so we feel good from that perspective.
And Dr. Traxler continued to stress that everyone exercise personal responsibility to help lower infection rates.
Stopping the spread of this virus is dependent on every person and their actions and their decisions, regardless of whether things are being reopened or when they reopen. And so our messaging still to people is the same as it was even when things were closed, which is to do the social distancing, especially when you're out in public, avoid large gatherings, and then wear the face mask.
So consider your actions and the precautions you're taking. This is the worst level of infections that we've seen since this all started. Now, remember back, are you taking the precautions you were taking in March or April? Because you should be, if not more. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. What are your thoughts on these spiking case numbers? Did you go out and vote on Tuesday? Let us know. Tell us what's happening and what's going on in your life, if you're staying home, if you're going out, or what you're thinking about. We want to know. 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, a message about your thoughts, feelings on what's going on, and where you're calling from at 803-563-7169. AT, do we have any voicemails?
Yeah, we have a repeat offender calling us today. Yeah, that's right.
Let's roll the tape.
Let's roll the tape.
Roll the tape.
Roll tape.
Is the tape rolling?
AT and Gavin, it's your friendly neighborhood grandstand correspondent, Roman Sturgis. It's been a while. I thought I'd give you another update. Also, kind of weird that it's so easy to call you and nobody's doing it. It's easy, guys. 803-563-7169. Leave a message. We do that still, right? So here's my COVID update. The gym's opened up yesterday. I went to the gym around noon, and I'm very sore today because it's been a while. People are still getting used to it. It doesn't even seem like it's a real thing to social distance at our gym anyway. There's only maybe 10 people there anyway, so I guess that wasn't that big of a deal, but The beaches have been full. I think it's kind of like summer season already. Traffic is awful, and the beaches are very full of people doing their thing. I see a lot of people riding bikes around the neighborhood. I'm starting to think that Myrtle Beach is the honey badger of South Carolina. Another big news for us is that the school year is over, so homeschooling is finished. And I wanted to shout out to Post and Courier writer Sienna Adcox, who had a great article the other day about what literacy is going to look like in South Carolina next year. She had this article basically showing us that teaching young people how to read online doesn't really work. So I'm kind of concerned about that moving forward. I also wanted to share with you, I don't know if these are blind spots or hot takes, but what I'm watching now is Be Foreigners on HBO. A really cool show. You have to watch it on HBO. Unfortunately, it's not streaming for free anywhere. But it's about Vikings who start showing up in modern-day Oslo, and that's pretty clever. Finally, two more things I want to tell you. My blind spot is I never read The Stand, and I'm reading that now, and I thought it was supposed to be about a nuclear holocaust apocalypse. Turns out it's actually about a super flu, and that was kind of apropos. And here's my hot take for AT. The Phantom Menace, actually a good Star Wars movie. Didn't think so when it came out when I was a kid, but now that I have an 8-year-old daughter, she loves it, and I'm starting to think that George Lucas is even more of a genius. Take care, guys. Bye.
Yes, Roman, I know. I want to know what it's like now since we didn't get to this voicemail sooner. You're talking about your gym experience. I want to know if you're still going, if it's still packed out, if people still aren't social distancing. I haven't gone back to my gym. It turns out I don't need to go to a gym to maintain this physique. That
you're equally buff, bro. It's
the walking and just like the...
You just told us last episode that you haven't been walking that much. So it's
the,
not
walking,
the walking
still. No, it's I'm slowly phasing things away and realizing that it's just my being, apparently. Perhaps if I just continue to eat my spinach and drink.
It's your Gavin feed, the tasteless mush that you eat that fuels your... your robot body.
No, I need to get back into all that stuff. Yeah, Roman, we look forward to seeing you on the Zoom happy hour this evening.
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah. I love your hot take, but I gotta disagree. The Phantom Menace is bad. I mean, look at Jar Jar. Jar Jar's a mess. And what about the guy who owns Anakin Skywalker, who's this gypsy caricature flying rat thing? I was like, that's no good.
Overall trash movie.
And they get rid of friggin' Darth Maul, and he's the coolest part of the whole thing. He's the whole reason why everyone our age even went to go see it.
These are all very important things for a separate
Gavin
podcast.
Is not interested. He does not like Phantom Menace. Okay, Gavin, you had me write down a few topics that you wanted to talk about, right?
Yeah, because we forgot to talk about them the other day. I was at the beach over the weekend, and I'm an animal person. Push comes to shove, you know, whatever. I love animals. I don't hate them. I saved another...
That's a real soft endorsement. I wouldn't kill it if it was here, okay?
Yeah, I mean... I'm not gonna say no to it, but I did save another member of our wildlife community. I've saved multiple wild animals in my time, and this time I add a horseshoe crab to my repertoire. I was walking along the beach. I saw this prehistoric being, which they are, on its back with its many legs in the air kicking, which is actually how it swims in the water. I did some further research on this. Very freaky.
But your altruistic heart had to jump right in. Right?
Yes, I'm learning about empathy because I'm still reading the Dalai Lama's book. So I'm learning to heal my heart. And I turned him over. He didn't have a big stinger. And I mean, you always see their shells, you know, and it's like so rare to actually see them in the wild like that. And turned him around, kept walking, kept finding more sand dollars. I found a total of 6 sand dollars when I was down
at the beach. But Gavin, what happened to those sand dollars?
I might have broke 2 in my pocket. And then I was really bummed about that because, you know, it's enough to find 1 sand dollar, but then you 6. So I broke 2, and then later on, 5 more were broken when a cooler incident happened.
That's maybe 7 total sand dollars.
Okay, no, okay,
your
math
sand
out.
Dollar
okay,
math so is way off.
Yeah, it's like learning to count coins, you know, because the dollar.
Or
the
did you break some child sand dollars near you or something like that?
The conversion rate's really difficult. Okay.
So you like prime numbers?
I hate prime numbers. God,
don't even get me started.
So three got crushed.
later in an unfortunate cooler accident. Could not be avoided. And then so one survived that I had to transport home with all my might. And it's home. It made it safe. You might see it on the Zoom call. But it was, I mean, I just felt like a monster going back to my wildlife. I've saved an egret once when I was in Baton Rouge. If you want to know what other wildlife I've assisted.
Name one other animal you've saved.
The egret. And
that, besides that one, besides the egret and the horseshoe
crab. Oh, a turtle when I was in Myrtle Beach. I think I talked about this in a previous pod. Remember we were out, I was buzzing around Myrtle Beach, and that guy was trying to cross Kings Highway. And I was like, yo.
You're just a savior.
Our cooter. Yeah, our little river cooter.
So, cooter,
I don't find them, they find me. Of course, I treat them with dignity and respect that they deserve because they could be.
Modern day Doolittle, come on. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. doesn't have anything on you talking to dragons.
So I don't need to have a pet. I can't have one in my house, but B, I don't need one because I feel like nature provides for me. Very spiritual.
My wife has told us that we need to bring up my wife. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do some Borat impressions.
I did.
She wanted me to bring up the fact that, so she works at a bar. I went down there the other day and our friends were there and we hung out outside. It wasn't an inside thing. So we were all hanging out outside. And then afterwards, when we were driving home, she asked me what's wrong. And I was like, I don't know. We shouldn't do that, you know? And she's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, I don't think we did anything really bad, but it's not the solution to the pandemic to drink beers with your friends. You know what I mean? And she goes, oh, you know what you're experiencing? Catholic guilt.
Can we get like a course?
Yeah, hell yeah. I have that. So, I mean, it's just sort of like you're doing something. Yeah, you're doing something and you know it's bad and you're still doing it, so you can't fully enjoy it.
Yeah.
Catholic guilt.
Yeah. And one of three Catholic brothers that I grew up with. I mean, it makes it sound like we were in a seminary. We weren't. Me and my brothers were Catholic. Went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. And I feel like my mother did a really good job of getting us that Catholic guilt. And I don't remember like any one turning point, but like you always had like this, shouldn't be enjoying things essentially. So
is that adult bad news, Catholic guilt?
Yeah, but you work through it. You work through it. then you overcompensate. So sometimes you get a little too crazy, which I've never really been known for. But then you try and find this medium. It's all about moderation, you learn. But yes, Catholic guilt is real. I've been told mine is still present, but I try and make up for it. Join us on the happy hour. You'll find out.
Gotta get that final plug in there. Always be closing. A, B, C.
I'll have a couple
coffee
drinks.
Is for closers. Glenn, Gary, Glenn, Ross.
We'll probably have some excerpts on Saturday's pod for you, and we'll go from there. But we want to see everyone. Thanks for tuning in the pod. We're going to keep on doing these until we can't do them anymore. And you can keep up with the latest news on SCETV and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. They're out there giving you all that important news, COVID and non-COVID related. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson. We are here for you, our lead community, throughout this week and as the situation continues to develop. We are still in full-scale hashtag lead laugh love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Did you pour out a Yingling?
Yeah, I'm really regretting it. It doesn't taste as good when you can smell it.
No.
I don't want to throw up.